Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 15, Instructions for Civilized Human Beings, Text Number 30. Yaschita vidaye yat yuta. Syan ni sango parigraha. Eko vivictas sharano. Bhikshur bhiksha. Mitasanaha. Ya, one who, chitta vijaye, conquering the mind, yataha, is engaged, syat, must be, disango, without contaminated association. Aparigraha, without being dependent on the family. Eka, alone. Vivikta, sharana, taking shelter of a solitary place. Bhikshu, a renounced person. Bhiksha, by begging alms just to maintain the body. Mita ashanaha, frugal in eating. Translation of Prabhupada by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. One who desires to conquer the mind must leave the company of his family and live in a solitary place, free from contaminated association. Maintain the body and soul together, he should beg as much as he needs for the bare necessities of life. Purport. This is the process of for conquering the agitation of the mind. One is recommended to leave, to take leave of his family and live alone, maintaining body and soul together by begging alms and eating only as much as needed to keep himself alive. Without such a process, one cannot conquer lusty desires. Sannyas means accepting a life of begging, which makes one automatically very humble and meek and free from lusty desires. In this regard, the following verse appears in the Smriti literature. Dvandva hatasya garhastyam dhyana bhangadi karanam. Lak shayitva grihi spastam sanyasad avicharanyan. In this world of duality, family life is a cause that spoils one's spiritual life for meditation. Specifically understanding this fact, one should accept the order of sannyas without hesitation. Yas chita vijaye yata Syan nisango parigraha eko vivikta sharano bhikshur bhiksha mitashanaha. One who desires to conquer the mind must leave the company of his family and live in a solitary place, free from contaminated association. To maintain the body and soul together, he should beg as much as he needs for the bare necessities of life. When Ramananda Roy was talking to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, I asked him, what is the goal of life and how do you achieve it? So Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Ramananda Roy, answered, beginning with Vanashram, Vanashramam Acharivita Purushena Pumakpuman Vishnu Aradite Panta Ito Toshit Karanam, that one should accept Varna and Ashram. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said this, ekabhaya. Ekabhaya means is external. In other words, there are processes by which one can get out of the material concept of life gradually. And Vanashram is the beginning of human life. Human life means a life which is dedicated towards at least self-realization. Vanashram is to help one give one the opportunity to worship Vishnu Rajate, to worship Vishnu, by calming the mind down. The mind has two activities, hankering and lamentation. And as soon as one is hankering, the result will be lamentation. One cannot hanker without eventually lamenting. Because if we get what we want, then we'll have to lose it, and therefore we'll have to lament. And if we don't get what we like, what we want, then we'll still have to lament, because we'll have to lament we didn't get what we wanted. So as soon as there's hankering, there must be lamentation. And as soon as there's lamentation, then one will have to try to either do things which are even more foolish, or after some time the lamentation will be forgotten, and then one will start hankering again, only to result in more lamentation. And as long as we're hankering, lamenting, then our relations with others are going to be on the material platform. Therefore, Ramananda Roy suggested varna and ashram because it's a life full of duty. And although there may be hankering and lamentation, one still is able to control the mind and senses to some degree and at least go on performing one's duty. So at least externally, one will not become entangled. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is not satisfied with that, and he asked Ramananda Roy to explain something further. So Ramananda Roy explained about the process of eventually renunciation, sannyas, as mentioned here. He went through karma yoga, jnana yoga, and even sannyas or astanga yoga. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was not satisfied until Ramananda Roy mentioned the verse, Jnane priyasa murupasta namanteva. Because ultimately speaking, self-realization is meant for impersonal realization. That I'm not this body. The fact that I'm not this body will not tell me who I actually am. But better to find out what you're not, but than thinking yourself to be something that you're not. But even better than that is to find out who we actually are. Dhritarashtra, he was quite offensive to the Pandavas because he wanted to kill them all the time on behalf of his son, Duryodhana. And therefore, at the end of his life, he was in a miserable condition because he lost everything. Now, we may think that's very unfortunate. Someone has lost everything. But better to lose everything before the end of life than to lose everything at the end of life. Because if you lose everything at the end of life, you may lament for some time, but then you'll adjust yourself to a life of renunciation. But if you wait till the end of life and you lose everything, there's great lamentation. And lamentation is in the mode of ignorance. So, urdvam gacchati sattvastha madhye tishtati rajasa jaganya guna vrittista ado gacchati tamasa. If you act in the mode of goodness, you go upward to the heavenly planets. If you act in the mode of passion, you stay in this earthly planet. And if you act in the mode of ignorance, you go down to the animal species. So lamenting at the time of life in the mode of ignorance can bring one down to the lower species of life, which is the most unfortunate. So Dhritarashtra, everything was taken away from it. Imagine if you had 100 sons and then suddenly have no sons. In this super strong body, and suddenly your teeth are falling out, coughing all the time. It's quite a impetus for detachment from the material concept of life. If you have a young, strong, healthy body, you think, why should I renounce? I can enjoy. And if you can't even eat, halva, then you start thinking, I think I need a change. I think I need a new body or something, maybe a spiritual one if one's around. So Dhritarashtra, he had nothing left. His teeth were falling out. He didn't even have his teeth. They were falling out. He was coughing all the time. Couldn't hear anything. What'd you say? And so Vidura came back to instruct Dhritarashtra. He couldn't tell Dhritarashtra to take up the process of devotional service because he was so offensive to the Pandavas that he was disqualified from doing that. Instead, he took up the life of Adira. That is, he left home without any notice. You know, I'm leaving home. You know, this is my email address in case you want to find out where I am. Now, he left home without telling anyone in the dead of night, without even telling his servant, his faithful servant Sanjay, and went into the forest with his faithful wife Gandhari. And there he started he lived very frugally, because in the forest there's no opportunity to cook feasts. So he lived very frugally, maybe some fruit and some nuts, whatever he could find, and bathed himself regularly and meditated upon Krishna. And at the end he was able to at least realize the difference between himself and his body, and therefore he became liberated to some extent. So this lack of material opportunities is not necessarily a curse. In the material world, people judge that they are successful, as we heard in the last verse, if you have wealth. That the fact that God is giving you money means that or giving you material opportunities means that he likes you. And you're sinful if you don't get material opportunities. This is the modern conception. That if one is a beggar on the street, homeless, then he must be sinful. He should be avoided. And if one is a millionaire, a billionaire, then he must be quite pious. God loves him. We should try to get his association. Maybe the person living on the street is suffering the reactions of his previous activities, but he's probably in a better position than the person who has unlimited wealth and is misusing it. Because at the end of the beggar's life, the end of the homeless person's life, he may be, due to his suffering, he may be turning to God all the time. So he'll become elevated. He's already lost everything, but now he's become more pious, and therefore he'll get the results of his pious meditation. And the billionaire, who has become proud and arrogant, he's going to lose everything anyhow at the time of death, and his pride and arrogance are going to send him into a horrible situation. Maybe in the next lifetime, at best, he'll become homeless if he doesn't enter into the lower species. So to admire someone because of their so-called material opulence will simply bring us down to the same path as they are, which will ultimately be a path of frustration, at least at the time of death. When you're surrounded by your relatives and they're checking out your will, see if they want to say a few good things to you before you leave. And then they're crying, whatever else, lamenting, oh, don't go. Yeah, right. I guess I won't go if you ask me to. They can't even, at the time of death, you can't say, Yamadutas could wait on, you know, they're offering some prayers to me. Wait till they're done, then we can go. At the time of death, when the Yamadutas come, you know, they don't ask you, they don't check their watch and give you 5 minutes. Therefore, an intelligent person that before leaving the body enters into a life of renunciation. Previously in other yugas, when at least in Dwarpa Yuga when this was spoken, then it was not so unusual for people to go and renounce their family life and try to remain in a secluded place and engage in meditation and Krishna consciousness. Because the whole yoga process, the whole purpose of life is to control the mind. Prahlad Maharaj said that in this world there's no enemy except for the uncontrolled mind. Now the mind, what does it mean to be uncontrolled? It means when it's influenced by the material energy. Namely, kama, lobha, krodha, matsara, moha. Matsara, moha, and what's the other one? Lust and delusion. Moha, matsara, madness. So that's when it's uncontrolled. It just drags us everywhere in the modes of material nature. Controlled mind means that it's under Krishna's control. The mind has to be engaged in something, and it's engaged in the lower, in the modes of material nature, then it'll take us into another situation, the material energy. And when the same mind is engaged in thinking about Krishna, then it'll take us back to the spiritual world eventually. But that's up to the soul. When the soul is actually using his mind, his intelligence and his determination to put the mind in Krishna consciousness through the process of agreeing to devotional service, following the orders of the spiritual master in disciplic succession, connecting one with the acharyas and ultimately with Krishna, then the result is that the mind comes under Krishna's control. What does it mean to come under Krishna's control? Because Krishna is so attractive. The mind becomes absorbed in thinking about Krishna. So the mind has to be under something control. Either it's under the material energy's control or it's under Krishna's control. When the soul is not aware of the fact that he's a soul, then he's under the influence of the false ego, which means that the false ego will allow the mind to go anywhere. And when the soul realizes his relation with Krishna, then he puts his mind on his he utilizes his intelligence, devotional service, and so the mind becomes Krishna conscious, becomes conscious of Krishna. Nowadays people renounce. They never leave their home. They give up their job. But they don't know what to do. Just like in America, now people don't want to go to work because they're being paid to stay at home and watch television. So they're free from all their entanglement of work, but now they're just absorbing the mind in some nonsense. They think that this will actually help them. Before, being engaged in work, at least they were prevented from engaging in too much nonsense. But now they're fully have the capacity to engage in all kinds of nonsense and get inspired to do it. Watch other people engage in nonsense. Because that's the inspiration. We can't engage in so much nonsense unless we're inspired to do so. So we have to associate with people who are engaged in nonsense in order to be inspired to do the same thing ourselves. And therefore, one has to become free from contaminated association. It's not enough to just go and renounce, go somewhere. But if we don't understand why we're doing it, we don't understand that we're trying to get free from contaminated association, we may start thinking about our previous association no matter where we are, thinking that it's divine. Or as one person was told, that if you drink, you're going to go to hell. But the man said, but my mother drinks. Well, she's going to go to hell too. But my father drinks. He's going to go to hell. All my brothers and sisters, they also drink. Well, they're all going to hell. But all my friends drink. Well, they're also going to hell. Okay. if my father, my mother, brothers and sisters, my friends are all in hell, then hell is heaven for me. So people don't know, because relationships are the basis of everything. Everyone's looking for some kind of relationship. If we can't have a loving relationship with a wife or a husband or children or relatives or friends, then we get a dog and we, moo, Fifi, I love you. Ooh, how sweet. So we need relationships, and we don't have relationship within Krishna consciousness, then naturally we'll have some relationship, at least on the subtle platform. So this free from contaminated association doesn't mean I go somewhere and I dream about all my contaminated association. How it would be nice if I was back home. No, we have to recognize what is contaminated association. And any association that doesn't bring us in contact with the acharyas in this civil succession and bring us to the platform of Krishna consciousness is to one extent or another contaminated. If someone is not helping me remember Krishna, then surely they're going to be helping me forget him. And therefore we have to avoid that. And then wherever we are, that should be the goal, to think about Krishna. So these temples are supposed to be spiritual worlds. They're supposed to be, what do they call those? I forgot the word in English now. Embassies, yeah, embassies. They're embassies to the for the spiritual world. And they're embassies for us in the spiritual world if we are here free from contaminated association, free from all this nonsense in our past. All the people, all those loved ones we left behind who we thought loved us. And therefore, oh, it was so nice. We remember all the nice things. We don't remember any of the bad things, usually. But that's all contaminated association. People are bewildered, we're bewildered, and our association with them, previously with people, was also bewildering. Just full of angry and lamentation. So here we have the opportunity to think about Krishna, serve Krishna, and ultimately remember Krishna. We don't have to go into the forest in Kali Yuga, because Kali Yuga everywhere is a forest. Forest of material existence. There may be no tigers or deer or others, but people are like tigers or deer. And the whole civilization is more or less like a jungle. Sometimes it appears civilized, but at any moment the animals in the forest can become very violent. So we may be thinking that we're living in a comfortable place, but it may not be so comfortable all the time. Who could have expected that with a whole year people would be locked down in their houses? Democracy. We're living with free freedom. We're all free. We're all free to follow whatever the TV tells us to do. Whatever the people we elected tell us to do, we're free to do or not to do, and then we have to face the consequences. But none of the association in the material world is telling us to think about Krishna. They may tell us so many things that we may have to follow, but we should follow those who are also telling us to become Krishna conscious and follow the process of doing it. And then in any situation, stane sita shuti gatam dhanavang nobir, in any circumstance, if we're thinking about Krishna, then we're rightly situated. And then there's nothing to worry about. Masuchaha. Otherwise, in any other circumstance, we may be living in a palace full of servants, getting more and more attached to our material circumstances, and the Yamadutas are reserving a special vacation place for us because we're going to be there for a long time. Make yourself at home, my dear soul. You and Yamaraj are going to have a lot of meetings together. Direct association with the Mahajan. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions? Yes.
Srila Prabhupada says that after 50 years one should take sannyas. Shame is not to. But some devotees take other opinion from Bhagavatam that if someone have a wonderful wife helping spiritual life, it is not necessary to take sannyas. It seems controversial. What do you think?
Controversial? Never heard of anyone getting into a controversy because they're with the wife. Our society is not so advanced so far. Maybe contradictory. Because it says in one place we should retire at the age of 50 and go into the forest, into the Varna. But you can go with your wife also into the forest. Because Vanaprastha, you can stay with your wife. But there's no bodily relationship at that time. Only when the man is sufficiently qualified to go and preach and live a life of austerity should he leave his wife and let his wife go back to live with the children. So it's not that everyone should take sannyas. One should take sannyas if one is actually qualified to do so. Otherwise, what is the value of sannyas if you leave your wife and that's all you do is think about her? One should leave one's wife so that when one is qualified not to think about her anymore and think about Krishna, and wants to focus the mind more on Krishna and feel than think about his wife in separation, when one is prepared to think about Krishna in separation. So that takes training. And when one's not trained, it won't help very much just to give up one's material situation. Because as a matter of fact, it won't help, it'll actually make things worse. As Prabhupada said, instead of giving up your wife and then going to Vrindavan, starting another family there, better stay with your wife. Anything else?
One more. When to a dead person tulsi is put in the mouth or sprinkled with Ganga water, there is a belief he or she goes to the spiritual world. But some say this happens only to qualified persons. What do you think?
Well, that's what it says in Nectar Devotion. There may be some instances where something extraordinary happens due to the execution of some devotional principle. But that's there in order to encourage us to perform those activities. But it's not necessarily true for everyone. But we're not in a position to say exactly who it's true for and who it's not true. But it's auspicious, and therefore we do it. It's not that we do something like we clap our hands before the deities, we check our sinful activities and see how many flew away. And then if there's not flown away, then we criticize the nectar devotion. Yeah. You said if I clap my hands, all my sinful activities will go away, just like the birds in the tree. When you clap your hands, they all fly away. But I notice I still have a few left. What's going on? No, it depends on our absorption in Krishna consciousness and our faith also. So we don't want to diminish faith in the words of the scripture by saying it's an exaggeration. But we have to be realistic that not everyone is equally faithful when they do those activities. And therefore, not everyone gets the same result. Hawalo, Grandharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.